Hello and welcome to another episode of the Monday Mile podcast. Today we're linking up with former Royal Marine Commander and Special Forces Operator. Having served his country for 20 years, he's travelled and led operations in some of the most hostile places on the planet. An author and one of the lead directing staff from Channel 4's SAS Who Dares Wins. An advocate for men's health and mental health, he's open and an honest inspiration. Jason Carr Fox, how are you?
I'm all right, yeah. Well, apart from you dragging me out in this, I'm all good, yeah.
This is a mellow environment.
I retired, it's over.
It's just a bit of rain.
No.
However, you have kindly provided me with this delightful brolly.
Thought it was the least I could do.
What a gentleman.
I was
hoping you were going to hold it for me.
I don't think that works for...
No, maybe not.
Well, I could have done, but
anyway. Are you much of a walker?
Yeah, I do like walking. I don't do too much walking around London. I do, but I'm cutting around. I don't purposely go out and walk around London, but I do get out of London and do a lot up in the hills and the mountains, whatever, wherever I can get away.
You're best known for appearing on Celebrity SAS. What's it been like working on that show?
It's awesome. It is also hard work, which I like. It's been a weird roller coaster ride, like suddenly doing that, having come from nothing anywhere near like the media world, has been a journey, I have to say. But actually working on it is awesome.
That must be such a contrast from the life that you formerly led. How does one go about entering the SAS?
We just go on a TV show.
Sign me up. No, absolutely not.
I didn't have it planned out from like an early age, like some people do with their careers. Oh, I want to do this. I basically grew up in Luton, which is not the greatest of places to grow up. Not as far as I was concerned anyway. Didn't do well at school and realised that I needed to basically do something with my life. I didn't have good enough qualifications, and so the only option for me was to join the military, as far as I was concerned.
Your dad was a Marine?
He was, yeah, but that was like way, way before I ever remember him. That was a influence to a certain degree, so because of that, I joined the Marines at 16. Thought I was gonna ace it, thought I was hard as nails, turned up and soon realised I wasn't and found it really difficult to begin with and missed my mum. Miss my mum cooking for me, miss my mum doing me ironing, washing, all that sort of rubbish. At 16, you're just like a sponge. And so you do sort of pick things up reasonably quickly and bounce back from like setbacks pretty quickly. I didn't mind people shouting at me because I'm just a 16-year-old. I've spent most of my life getting shouted at. And soon realised that I really enjoyed being a soldier and sort of like picked it up pretty quickly. Loved rolling around in the dirt. Did that for 9 years. And then after 9 years, I was like, well, if I'm going to stay doing this sort of job, then I need to take it to the next level.
I want to challenge myself. Yeah, an element of challenge.
It was an element of challenge. It was an element of wanting to do the job at another level and also get paid more.
Always an attraction, right?
It was a big attraction.
Is that a natural pathway?
Yeah, it sort of is. There's a lot of people that want to go that way, so they go the way that I sort of went. But I mean, it's only a small group. There's like a really, really, really small percentage of people pass the course. So yeah, it is a natural sort of route, but it doesn't always work out for a lot of people.
What would you describe the skill set as an SAS?
What required?
Recruit, yeah. What is it that makes you guys different?
I reckon realistically, you just got to be stubborn as fuck.
Is that what you'd say? Your personality trait is stubborn?
Not in a negative sort of way.
Okay.
I'd say if I want to do something, then I'll get amongst it.
Yeah.
I did that when I was, 25 years old. I didn't give myself a get out clause. There wasn't like something to fall back on. There was no fallback. I wasn't in a relationship. I was like, this is what I'm fucking doing. I didn't care about anything else.
So that was the only option for you?
Yeah, it's brutal. It does get brutal. No matter how hard it got, I never ever thought about quitting. I never was like, well, I could always go and do this or get a nice cup of tea, hotel room, that'll do. I was like, I'm all in. And I just like embraced it. And you know, there are times when you're like, what the fuck am I doing? I still had that. I still danced with the old, what the fuck am I doing?
Yes.
I just never let it go on to, well, I could be doing this instead. I just was like, well, I'm gonna do this.
That is savage. That is not normal. Are you aware of that resilience?
No, I'm aware now more.
Yeah.
Of what resilience is and what it looks like in me. I didn't then. I was like 25 years old. I didn't have a fucking clue. I knew how to, there's a lot of umbrellas about.
There is a lot of umbrellas. This is resilient. This walk is slightly resilient.
It's character.
We could have totally canned the podcast in, but instead, for those people that are wondering, listening to the audio, we are currently dodging
everyone.
Everyone, branches and trees, with two umbrellas the size the size of a doorway. So when it comes to the SAS and the actual selection process itself, can you describe what it takes? The skill set?
The skill set, it's not really, you have a base level of soldering capability. You got to understand a bit about tactics. And the reason I say that is because they do teach you everything. They teach you everything.
Yeah.
But you got to pick it up so quickly. If you don't know it already before, you got to be an absolute superhuman to really get amongst it. So it's like literally they'll teach you something and then they'll expect you to go and carry it out within like a day of being taught something practically, like to the letter. Okay. So, and there's a lot to take on board.
Can you give us an example of that other than your skiing?
that was done in the Marines. So as an example, you turn up and you are literally taught navigation, but then you are thrust into like running around the mountains in Wales in horrendous weather. I did mine in the winter and expected to be able to find your way on time under extreme pressure. And unless you've done that before, you're not going to pass it. You're just not, because there's so much involved. And all the time as well, you're picking up niggling little injuries. You've got to push them to your back of your head. So it's not just the skills that are required. It's like you can't be fazed by any of the outside noise. And the outside noise is weather, people putting you under pressure by scrutinizing your ability to navigate, picking up like sore knees, ankles, blisters.
What distance are we sort of talking here?
It was 4 weeks when I did it. You're racking up miles and miles and miles each week, but then the only one I can really quantify is the test week. So you're doing a test march a day and they're about 30 odd K a day. Wow. Apart from the last one's about, well, it's 54K as the crow flies, but it ends up being about 70.
So you're in ultra marathon territory.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, it's not as fast, it's slower because you're carrying
but
like,
still the load and the degeneration over 4 weeks on your body.
Then
do it at the...
It's brutal.
The crunch line. When you say, if you haven't done it before, you won't pass.
I mean, yeah.
What do you mean by that? As in
not the roots. I mean, I didn't really get up there and practice roots. You're not supposed to know what the roots are, but people do know what they are. But what I mean is by, like, you need to have navigated before up in the mountains as a soldier, like carrying kit, carrying a weapon. You need to have then, you know, you go on to the other phases, you need to know how to handle your weapon properly and safely. They're like full on stringent with how safe you are with a live weapon. You need to understand tactics. You need to understand how to use the ground to your advantage. You need to understand how to establish certain things like ambushes, observation positions, all these.
There's so much to it.
There's more to it than people think. We're not just like mindless thugs.
No, but even having a glimpse of it, and I'm very aware that it is, or it feels like a very raw glimpse into the TV show.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty brutal. Right, it's stopped raining slightly.
Slightly, we can manage this.
We can manage this, especially after what you've just shared with me. I feel like I'm in the tropics and there is zero storm right now. Now, we're very lucky through Channel 4 and you guys sharing the show of SAS, Who Dares Wins. We kind of get a little glimpse of what it's like. How far away is that from your reality?
It's quite, you know, without doing the show a disservice, because it is, don't get me wrong, the show is hard. It is hard. It's a short space of time and it's intense. But in comparison, it's nowhere near. It's nothing, it doesn't even come close, because ultimately selection, if you add on, there's a few extra bits at the end, it's 9 months and it's just intense. Like one of the phases is 6 weeks long and you are getting watched and listen to for 6 weeks, like 24 hours a day. You don't know when they're not listening.
Is that part of the interrogation process?
No, it's called the jungle phase, and it's basically the tactical phase. It's where you learn about tactics. It's where you learn all your weapon handling drills. That phase that I was talking about, the jungle, it isn't the interrogation phase. It's where you do all your soldiering. So you're out in the jungle, Far East. You're living in it for like a month. That is you. You have to shine in that month to the DS, the directing staff, to prove that you can look after yourself, soldier in the jungle, navigate, and in the jungle it is absolutely nails. And
so also, is this like an environment that's almost recreated? It's not a live, real war situation.
No.
It's purely part of the training process.
Yeah.
Okay, and in that jungle phase, what's the skill set required to survive that, both mental and physical?
You've got to be physically robust. You are always going to pick up some form of injury. Everyone gets injured. Everyone's got niggly knees, ankles. You get stung and bitten by every creature known to man that lives in the jungle. And then psychologically, you've got to just, first of all, you've got to embrace the environment you're in, because you are never fighting it. It's going to win. And you've also got to be able to apply your military skills as a soldier and show that you can stay switched on in tough environments, when you're not drinking much or decent water, you're not eating enough food to keep you going for what you're actually doing. Like, everyone loses shitloads of weight in the jungle. You've just got to show that you're somebody who can work in small teams and get on with everyone. That's the key, is to show that you have got a base level, decent base level knowledge of soldiering, and also you're a good bloke that gets on with everyone, pretty much.
Mental. And when it comes to food, are you then in a position where you have to source that yourself? Is that part of it?
There's a little bit of that, but most of the time you go in with all your rations and your berg and your rucksack.
Do you ever go wrong and just pound it all in one go? That would be me.
There's an art to not doing all your food in one go.
Yeah.
So you have like days of rations, and you know how many you've got, and even though you're hungry and you're like, I could get away with eating tomorrow's pudding, but you don't. Because if you do, you run out and then you're fucked.
Right, yeah, I'd be fucked. Zero self-control. When it comes to the interrogation process, can you talk to me a little bit about that and your experience?
Everyone loves to talk about the interrogation.
Yeah, because it's savage.
I know. Everyone think, like, I don't know why people find it hard. I've done it three times in my career. I've done it in the Marines. Yeah, I've done versions of it.
What makes you say that?
I mean, it's uncomfortable, don't get me wrong, it's really uncomfortable. I don't know, you get told how you should apply yourself, and you just do that. And I completely ignored what else was going on. Like, you're in stress positions, it hurts, yeah, okay, fine, but you just got to do it anyway. And then you've got people trying to get you to say and do things that you've been told
not to
say and do.
Yeah.
And so I just sort of stuck to that. There is a little bit where you're trying to, you know, work out how you're going to build a relationship with these fucking mean people, but it's essentially to teach you to keep yourself alive, but
and to keep your mouth shut, right?
Yeah, to a certain degree, but you
I
are
feel like,
to
believe it or not, I'd be all right at that bit.
What, keeping your mouth shut?
Yeah.
I don't know about that.
I mean, like, I love a little chat, but if you're told not to do something, you just don't do it. No, is it not?
It is a bit like that. It's a bit, you've got to build a relationship with someone that is, you know, is not nice.
Yeah.
But you've got to do it in a way where you're not giving anything away that is sensitive. And so I suppose the issue with it is you are tired. You've been on the run for like 7 days. You've not eaten for 7 days. You've been getting chased, cold, wet, miserable. I did mine. We went back to Wales. We did ours through Wales, and it was grim. And you're in small teams, trying to evade capture. You've got like 100-odd regular soldiers searching for you day and night. You're hiding in ditches, street, it's grim. So when you get captured, you are a little bit fucked.
Does it make you feel invincible, having lived that life?
Mm. So at the end of that course, I was 26, and yeah, you feel invincible. Then you join a special forces squadron, and there's a lot of old school guys there who've done it, been around the block a few times, and they suddenly fucking remind you that you're not invincible.
Put you in your place.
You come crashing back down. Yeah. You come crashing back down to earth pretty quickly. Because you've done selection, you think you know it all, and you don't. You're not even, selection doesn't teach you to be a special forces soldier. It just shows them that you've got the the right attributes to then go on and learn everything that you need to learn. They don't even scratch the surface on selection. You go, yeah. You join a squadron, then you're in it, you're learning on the job, and it's like mental.
Would you say those attributes that are required humble you? Because you can never stop learning.
I think you have to be a bit humble, yeah. You can be a cocky young mid-20s individual, but you have to have a form of humbleness about you. Just to do that job, you can't be a walking ego or have a massive head. You'll get found out and you'll get kicked out. You join special forces and you're on 6 months probation anyway.
When it comes to egos, it must be quite funny for you working on the show and seeing some of the talent that do come through, especially on the celebrity version. We can't not mention Matt Hancock. For you, you must have really, really enjoyed the process of pushing him into the water. So much so that you posted a reel to classical opera music, not just for yourself, but for the country.
I just wanted people to embrace it. And to be fair, I got a dude that helps me with that stuff. He was like, mate, we should do this. And I was like, really? And he's like, yeah, we should do this. And I was like, okay, we'll do it.
So is that almost funny for you when people come on?
I'm on it to like help people push themselves further than they ever thought was possible.
Yeah.
But also I'm on it to have a laugh.
Yeah.
However, they can all be wrapped up in one. Like, me having a laugh can actually push people, you know, into dark places because I'm having a laugh at their expense. Now, I'm not doing it because I'm a bully. I'm doing it because the only way you actually get people to really sort of like show themselves is to put them under so much pressure, which involves taking the piss out of them sometimes.
Yeah.
That it, yeah, that's what it is, isn't it? And
do
I do have a bit of fun.
Feel a bit of guilt with that?
No.
Because you seem like a nice bloke.
No, they asked. They wanted to come on.
So they want it. They were asking for it.
They were. He wanted to come on. He knew the score. He wasn't getting in blind. He knew he was probably going to get rinsed. But with that in mind, we don't go in there with preconceived perceptions of them. I believe the four of us who are involved are professionally enough to be very unbiased towards different people, regardless of their background. Like, we had a word of ourselves and we're like, we are going to be fair to him, as with all the others, until he gives us an opportunity. Because we say that, you know, the slate's wiped clean when they come on the show. The slate was wiped clean, but it didn't take long for him to piss us off. If someone's going to crank us up, then we'll fucking go with that.
Yeah, so, savage.
Yeah. He cranked us up quickly enough. Not in his defence, but he's academically, he's a very clever person. You know, he's intelligent.
Yeah.
Emotionally, I don't think he's as intelligent. You ask him to do something, he puts 110% effort into it.
Okay.
But...
So is there an element of respecting him for that?
No, I mean, anyone can put 110% in. And actually, yeah, a little bit. If you're going to come and do something and someone asks you to do something, you put 110% in, I'm happy with that.
Yeah.
But when it boiled down to it, he just never let any barriers down. He still came across as arrogant. Whether he meant to or not doesn't matter. He did. And because of that, we didn't trust him enough to understand or know who he really was.
Oh. Boom! Hancock in one.
Yeah.
When it comes to your own military journey, you've been very open about your trauma post being in the military.
Yeah.
For those that don't know, can you explain a little bit about PTSD?
Okay, so we ain't got that long. It's a big subject. Yeah, so I was medically discharged in 2012 with post-traumatic stress disorder. Now, what does that look like? It's different for every single person that has ever been told they got PTSD. Everyone thinks that I had this like Hollywood version of PTSD where a car would backfire and I'd dive behind a bin or something. And it was nothing like that whatsoever. I didn't have flashbacks. I wasn't like diving for cover or hearing gunfire. I was just someone who all of a sudden, after an intense amount of going to war, basically, felt differently about the job. And I felt differently about a lot of things, to be honest, a lot of things in my life. I didn't understand it. I was getting ready to go again on another operational tour, And I just remember it feeling like it was a black cloud looming in the distance. And normally I'm fucking up for it. I loved my job. I loved the guys that I worked with. I was in a senior position. I had leadership responsibilities. And I was having to dig deep to motivate myself, let alone the rest of them. And I was like, fuck, this isn't right. So I sort of under the radar, or what I thought was under the radar, I went to explore it through the mental health, I suppose, department, which was small, to be honest.
What year is this?
This was in 2011. I started to do this. So yeah. I'd come back from a tour that was mental. We'd lost guys, both dead and seriously injured. It was fucking stressful, to be honest. When I first started to feel like this, I thought it was all because of, and up to until way after I left, I thought it was all, you know, my feeling of lowness and being a bit fucking aggy about my work. I thought it was all linked to work. But then when I looked back on it, I suddenly realized that actually I had all that stuff going on that I was trained to do and was good at. I loved it, but at the same time, I had normal life going on and I didn't know how to balance it. You know, I got married, you have arguments, you have a kid, kid's ill, we get divorced, you know, all that stuff. And it was that I hadn't been taught to deal with that then impacted work, and all up, it became a very complex, messy mashup of life. And that's when I was, if I'd have paid attention to it when it was happening and given myself a bit of self-respect and spoken to someone about it early on, I'd have probably nipped it in the bud. But that wasn't the way we did things back then. And it had an impact on me. I ended up leaving and then I had to deal with that. So not only was my personal life falling apart, I felt differently about work. Then that work said, right, you're sick. It's too sick to work in this job. So you're like, eh?
Wow.
And then you lose your sense of identity and you lose a bit of what you feel you belong to.
So how did you dig yourself out of that situation?
Out of the pit.
Because as a former athlete myself,
yeah,
once something major like that in your life stops, it's difficult, isn't it? Your sense of identity. And
so did you lose yours?
I would say I've seen a lot of people around me really struggle and suffer, but I feel very grateful for leaving my sport at the time I did, because I had another passion.
You didn't, okay.
So directly, no, but now I would say I'd openly talk about purpose and the struggle with purpose. Before, my purpose was to get up, to train, to be the fittest, best possible version of myself, to perform.
Yeah.
Whereas now I don't have that. Everything is driven by myself to succeed, is whatever I want it to be.
Yeah, and it doesn't matter what that looks like.
No.
That's the thing. So I think that you've obviously had you've been very good at accepting change.
Yeah.
To a certain degree, whereas a lot of people aren't. And it's weird because I've come from a world, an industry, the military, that is unbelievably good at working through change and dealing with it in times when you're not expecting it. I then am an individual that then has to deal with change, and I didn't accept it very well. And it happened pretty quickly. And so what I had to do was accept. It took a long time for me to accept. I had to be honest with myself about why it happened, and I wasn't to begin with. Even though I was going to see people, I didn't genuinely, I was like, fucking whatever. You know, they're telling me you're suffering from this, you need to do this, and I'm thinking, fuck off.
Were you open in those discussions? Because I think it's quite easy also.
Not initially.
To just bat it off.
Yeah.
I connect to that.
Yeah, I was chinning it off.
You're like, but interrogation, what?
Yeah, exactly.
This is no interrogation.
But then the other thing is I wasn't really connecting with the people that I was seeing. And so I was getting despondent. I was like, fucking hell, this person knows nothing about me. I was being almost confrontational in those chats. And it got to a point where I was like, my world, as far as I was concerned, I'm not saying this is the worst anyone's ever experienced, but as far as I was concerned, it collapsed, and I was stood on top of a cliff thinking about throwing myself off. And it was at that moment that I was like, right, and I was in a bad way. I was crying and shit.
And was anyone like, aware of this?
People have known, yeah. People know.
But during it?
Oh, no, fucking hell. No one knew that for a long time, apart from then the person that I started to see, but as in clinical psychologist. But I kept that one to myself for a bit of time. But what happened on that cliff was, I was like, hang on a minute. I mean, I can do this, which is pretty fucking drastic. Or if I don't do this, what am I going to do to stop this being a, because I can't go on like this. And that was the moment that I decided to be honest, where I was like, right, I've got to be honest with myself about the fact that I'm now going to go on a journey that is going to be fucking hard work, and it's going to be tiring. You're going to have to talk to people honestly now and be honest with them about what's been going on. But that was the moment that it did change. I walked away from that cliff, obviously, and I fucking felt a bit better to begin with. And then I met a clinical psychologist who I spoke to openly and realistically and listened to what she had to say. And yeah, it was all started to bounce back after that. But again, it came down to that acceptance thing. I wasn't accepting the change. And ultimately, we always fucking change.
And is that a change from a sort of masculine position of power and control of both your physicality and your emotions to having that sort of stripped away?
No, I think it was just accepting that fucking you can't do everything forever. I never really thought about that job finishing, and I fucking loved it. I loved it. You know, I haven't missed it for a long time, and I looked at an old picture the other day. It's just because one of the lads sent me an old picture, and I was like, that was good. But I didn't let it affect me in a bad way. I was like, that was just good.
Yeah.
That was good times. They were, you know, that's just something that is and is never going to be again. But that's life. You know, that's the acceptance thing, isn't it? Is the life thing. It's just, we're just...
It's part of your story.
Yeah, yeah,
I think
exactly,
that's the way I look back at my career. I'm like, wow, wasn't that incredible? And actually, I can't believe it even happened. Often I pinch myself. Yeah. I'm like, did I do that? Or how did I get there? And I think that's the incredible thing about life. If you're open to it, you never know which way.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
You speak a lot about mental health and men's health. Has that particular topic inspired you to take on some of the most savage challenges that I've seen you do? And do you get a real kick out of doing that?
Yes and yes. And also, I need to get some more in because I've been a little bit vacant from doing challenges recently.
I don't think you've been that vacant. I'm pretty sure you just cycled 700 miles.
No, that was you're right. The TV show, along with the challenges, and the first one was when I rode across the Atlantic with a few mates, they were the things that properly saved me. They gave me back the thing that was missing. I wasn't missing the special forces, a little bit.
Yeah.
I was missing adventure. I was missing challenging myself. And it was that got it back. It made me realise that it still exists. And it is, if you want it, still there. So, you know, it did. And then, you know, talking about mental health has given... That is my main purpose, is to just keep having that conversation. And, you know, if we can keep having it and the conversations I have land on certain people's ears and it helps one or two people, then I'm happy with that. And that makes me feel purposeful in life.
I think it's really special hearing someone like you, who is clearly a savage bloke, open up about mental health, because it makes it easier to connect to. When you were on that cliff edge, what was the actual deciding moment that made you think, I'm going to step away? And if someone's listening to this now that has struggled, what would you say to them?
I don't know, because I was racing through a lot of emotions. Like a lot of people say it's a selfish thing to do. It's not. The 100%, when I was in that position, the things that I was thinking as I was walking up to that cliff was, my time on this planet's done. I'm no use to anyone. In fact, I'm causing people more hassle being around than I am not. So what's the point? And it was all about other people. But then when I got up there, I was like, fuck, I don't think I was done with it. And I was like, hang on a minute, I keep going on about, you know, I was looking back at my life and I was like, I keep challenging myself. And this is just another challenge that I'm about to fucking give up on.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm not happy with that. And also I'm scared of heights. Well, I'm not scared of heights, but I've got a healthy respect for heights. And I was like, what the fuck am I doing stood on top of this cliff? This is going to have a big impact on a lot of people, even if I think I'm doing their heads in. Do you know what I mean?
So that challenge in itself gave you purpose. So when you say now that you need to do more challenges, what are we talking? How big are we?
Well, I like little challenges, big challenges.
What's a little challenge?
Little challenges, going out, doing a bit of climbing with my mates or up mountains or a bit of, you know, just small, stay in the UK.
Yeah.
Embrace this amazing country they live in that has amazing weather.
Yeah, we love that.
Or go out and plan a big expedition, whether it's like rowing the Atlantic or canoeing the Yukon, things like that. I like those sort of things, big journeys that require a lot of planning and preparation.
Do you like getting broken? Because the Yukon must have been pretty soggy, wet and damp, and Yeah. You know, we're talking sores and smelliness. Are you all right with that? Now you're living on the finer side of life.
To be fair, the Atlantic Row was worse than the Yukon for that stuff. Because you're just on a boat. At least on the Yukon, we stopped every night. Pulled the boats out of the water, set up a tent, nice fire going, all that sort of stuff. On the boat, it was...
romantic.
Mate, it was... yeah, exactly, it was actually. Me and Sean. The Atlantic was fucking brutal. It battered us for 50 days. And we're on a small fiberglass boat. There were no comforts. There was, like, literally no comforts. It was grim. We had sores everywhere.
Do you not question yourself, why am I still doing it to myself?
I just want to see if I can do it. Yeah, maybe a little bit. Yeah.
You want to say, okay.
Maybe I'm trying to prove to myself that I'm not getting old. I don't know.
I know how we can prove that.
How's that?
You can swap the skis for a snowboard.
Fuck that.
You're not afraid of the elements.
No, but I'm afraid of that tray.
So outside of the savageness, these mental mind-boggling challenges, do you still enjoy sport casually?
In what way? Watching or doing?
Both.
Doing, I'm not really doing it that much nowadays. Watching, I love it.
I heard you play a bit of golf.
Play? Oh yeah, actually yeah, I do. I do out. I go out, get amongst it, do a bit of golf.
I spoke to Wayne Bridge actually last night.
What did he have to say for himself?
He was wondering if you're still as shit as the last time you played with him.
He's a knob. No, actually I'm not, to be quite frank. I'm glad you've said this because it means I'm going to get amongst it, offer him out for a game of golf because he thought he was all that last time. It's been a good year and a half. No, more than that. I broke my leg last year. It was nearly 2 years since me and him have played.
Brilliant. So you can show him up this time round.
Well, I reckon,
it gives you a little challenge, a little task.
Here we go, Bridgie, you little shit.
He also asked me to mention a previous night out that you've endured together. Can you divulge anything there? Because I know Wayne. I've actually driven cars with Wayne.
We had a few drinks. We had a few drinks.
Should we just leave it there, or is there?
I got baggage. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. We'll leave the baggage behind. We'll leave it on the conveyor belt.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we don't want that bag.
When it comes to routine, coming from the military, is your routine still militant, and are you able to sway from it in any capacity?
I reckon my routine's more militant now.
Oh yeah, what we're saying.
Do you know what sorts my mental health out a lot is being super disciplined. I fucking, even though it's hard, I love it. I'm like, I'm still doing that. Like, get up, I was up. This isn't me bigging myself up, by the way. This is just because it keeps my fucking head in check. But I was up at 4:30 this morning, straight in a cold shower.
No, 4:30, that's then, the night.
Then went and, yeah, I know, but I knew that I needed to get it in because I wouldn't have got it in otherwise. Then went and trained with a few lads, actually, had a good crack. And then I go through, like, making sure that everything's good to go, you know. I just have a really good routine and I make sure it's not militant in the way that if something changes slightly, I'll freak out because I'll just adapt it.
Okay.
So if, like, for instance, later on this week, I'm traveling, yeah. Later on this week, I'm traveling down to Plymouth, doing a bit in Wales. I know I'm staying in hotels, not ideal. I'll just adapt my routine and make sure I'm disciplined in how I adapt it.
And what are you adapting in that?
Just what training looks like, when it happens, what my cold water immersion looks like, whether that's like...
Is that essential for you, the cold water?
Not essential, but if I can do it, I mean, I can get into cold water anywhere, pretty much. Whether it's a shower or a bath, I'll run a cold bath.
Get a bit of ice from the hotel?
Yeah, and I'll just...
And why do you do that? Because people speak a lot now about, you know, it's kind of almost on trend, so to speak. And I believe your reasoning is not that.
It's not, it's to do with discipline. It's because I've chosen to do that. It's uncomfortable. And I am showing that it doesn't matter how uncomfortable something is, I'll do it. And I feel better for it. It's not for anyone else's well-being.
Yeah.
It's for me. It's reminding me that I can do whatever I want.
And how about on the exercise front? Is that non-negotiable?
I'll exercise every day, and it can be, as long as it's consistent. It doesn't always have to be like mental session, but I will always do stuff. I can be in a hotel room and do press-up squats, mountain climbers, legs off the floor, leg raises, whatever. I'll make sure that there's a bit of time dedicated.
I am exactly the same.
Yeah. It's good for you, isn't it? It's good for your head.
Oh, it's for my head. This morning was an earlier start than it has been recently. And it's like, right, we're going running in the dark. And I hate the dark. Like, I'm terrified of the dark. And that, for me, has given me so much. Yeah, it's just set me up. The reward, the internal reward, yeah. Doing it for you, it just makes you smile, or it does me.
The reward is good.
What's your relationship like with Monday, start of the week?
It's all right. Today's Monday. It's
It is.
Pretty grim for Monday. Beginning of the week, I don't know, mine's pretty good. I like make sure that I check in with myself on a Monday, see how I feel. If I feel a bit low, I'll work out why and then and address it, so I don't take that feeling on through the week.
What could be a contributing factor
it could be anything
that makes you feel low.
Could be that I've got something that I need to do that I don't want to do.
So a bit of ag, bit of anxiety.
Bit of anxiety, but then I realise that it's all right. I allow myself to feel like that, and then I'm like, do you know what? Just get it done and it's all good.
That's how you felt about this podcast, right?
No. Nah, but I'll tell you, what I do is give myself a look forward.
A look forward?
Yeah. Let's use this as an example, but it's not true. So
okay.
This podcast, say I'm like feeling anxious about it.
Yeah.
Which is, don't read into that. I know you're going to.
Because you knew I was going to grill you.
What I'm thinking is, well, I know what, I've got to do a reading this evening at a carol service. That's something to look forward to. So then I've given myself a look forward.
Yeah.
It's something I actually learned in the military. They always start right as a look forward. So it's something to look forward to. You end like a presentation or a lecture on a look forward. It's something, it's a positive thing. So
and
I always,
it's just part of the puzzle, whatever that.
And if there isn't something there, then I'll make something to look forward to.
What else could that be? Like, would you reward yourself?
I'm going to go and give myself a good thrashing in the gym tomorrow morning.
Yeah.
Whatever.
I think a lot of people wouldn't see that as a look forward, but I can
but it's all relative to the person.
It totally is.
A look forward could be as simple as I'm going to have a cup of coffee at the end of it.
That was like me before the podcast. We're going to traipse all the way to Jason in South London, but I'm going to get a coffee.
Sorry.
No, I'm joking. With your career now, it's considerably different to your previous life in the military. Do you get any jip from the boys kind of being this lad in the media?
No, not really. Weirdly, no. A little bit, but only in jest.
Yeah.
A classic example is I did a series called Inside the Real Narcos, and at the beginning of each episode, there's me doing a voiceover and I go, I'm Jason, and I shout my name. I don't shout it, but it sounds like I do. One of the lads, one of my best mates, we phone each other, he'll answer the phone or I'll answer the phone and he'll say it like that. And I'm like, fuck off. But no, not really. I've been trying to get hold of my mate for a couple of weeks, couldn't get hold of him, no answer, not returning my calls. And then he phones him back and I'm like, fucking hell, where have you been? And he's like, I've been doing all the stuff you're gobbing off about on TV. I was like, all right, yeah, cheers, nice. I was like, that's a good comeback.
You're like, yeah.
So yeah, it's little bits like that. Oh, so the first and last time I do anything like this, I did a bit of advertising, you know, the old sort of paid advertising.
Yeah.
Did it for Neutrogena, Norwegian formula hand cream.
Nice.
I got fucking malleted for that.
Really? So,
yeah, lads are just giving me shit.
So much so you won't be modelling hand cream.
So much so that I actually phoned my agent up and I was like, tell them they can have their fucking money back. I'm pulling the post down.
No way.
No, I obviously didn't, but I was just like, oh.
You know what? I think it's a good thing though, because there's so much that you've shared in your time. And I think the way in which people can connect to you, because people don't expect that openness, that honesty. And I think that's where the conversation is changing with mental health. And especially in the last 3 years, things really have changed, and you are definitely a very big part of that.
Well,
so
thanks.
Thank you.
There's
from
bigger hitters out there.
All the men in my life, you know?
Thanks a lot. It also brings me on to Movember. That's why I'm sporting a fucking shit mo. Because we are.
It's not looking too bad. Lastly, Jason, are there any life mottos or quotes that you live by day to day that you can share with our listeners?
Yeah. The motto that I lead my life by is to live my life more like a toddler.
Oh, I like that. I've never heard that.
So basically, it means live more in the now. Don't worry about what's already happened. You ain't changing it. And don't worry about the future because it ain't happened. And that's what toddlers do. They just amble through life, having a fucking right crack.
Epic. Well, I will see you a little later when we amble up the pew to both read a carol at the Christmas carol service later. Jason Carl Fox, it has been such an honour to have you here.
You should have shouted it. Jason Carl Fox.
Yeah. There was a leaf blower. They're making a constant theme in the season currently. Mate,
there's a motto to this podcast, and that is don't record fuck all in London.
Very much so.
Because it is a nightmare.
Jason Carl Fox, thank you so much for joining us here on the Monday Mile Walk and Talk podcast. Listeners, you know what to do. Do make sure you are subscribed, and we will be seeing you every single week. Monday morning for the early risers. Make sure you plug in and walk and talk with that. It's a wrap.